The Andy Finn Show is back, and we're listening to U2 tonight because I saw U2 in concert last night. This was at the MCI Center. They're playing there tonight as well, and it was a great concert. They are a major band. I have seen U2 every tour that they've ever done in the United States. And that's the only major band I can say that about, because you don't know a band's going to be that good until they get good and they start playing, not clubs, but bigger places. And I just happened to catch U2 on their very first U.S. tour in a bar in St. Louis, where the stage was a foot and a half, 2 feet off the dance floor, and my son Joel and I were standing at the very front, right in front of these people who would later become famous, Bono and the guitarist The Edge and everybody else. And I've seen every U2 tour since then. So I watched them graduate to, you know, concert size arena venues, you know, 3,000 to 6,000. Then to arenas, that would be NBA basketball or NHL hockey size, 17,000 to 20,000. And finally to stadiums, like Giant Stadium or in Philadelphia or any place, in almost any city, essentially NFL football stadiums. And I have to say, I prefer them in the kind of venue I saw last night. So I met a couple of friends, and the three of us got tickets at the door. As you know, if you are a regular listener, I never buy tickets to anything in advance anymore. You can always do better at the door. And we sat directly across the arena from the stage in this lower deck, lower tier, and maybe 50, probably 20 rows up. And so the sound comes right at you. Now, I prefer to be closer normally because you can see what's going on. We were not able to see what's going on, although there were video screens. You can't really see the players. That is, you can't see the guitarist and exactly what he's playing. Whereas if you have a good seat and maybe even binoculars, you can see very well. So that's the trade-off. But the sound is great when you're that far away, because the whole sound is coming directly at you from all the speakers. Whereas when you're near the stage, you're below the speakers. They're raised overhead and suspended from the ceiling, typically at these shows. And so it really was one of the better shows I've ever had for sound. Certainly among U2 concerts, it may rank as the best U2 concert for the sound. It was loud. It was high energy. They were in great form. The crowd was very into it. So let me try and describe a little bit. U2 is a message band. And a message band makes a connection with an audience at a level that other bands don't. So I saw the Rolling Stones about 3 weeks ago. And I've seen the Rolling Stones on most of the tours they've done since the 70s. They are a high-energy band, and they do excite a crowd. And it's amazing the way they still draw. They actually outdraw every other band, and they have for 30 years. They can sell more tickets than anybody, including U2. But they don't actually have a message. They have a couple of songs, like Gimme Shelter, or maybe Angie, if you count that kind of thing. But in general, they are just a rock and roll band. You know, it's only rock and roll, but Mick likes it. So whether you're talking, you know, Sympathy for the Devil or Street Fighting Man or Honky Tonk Woman or Brown Sugar, it's just for fun. It's just rock and roll. U2 has a passion in their music that's missing from a band like the Stones or somebody like Led Zeppelin. It is also just about the music and about rock, because U2 will give you a layer of emotion, a layer of content that is missing from these other bands. So the song we just heard was off their first album, I Will Follow, but one of their other first hits was called Sunday Bloody Sunday. In fact, we'll go out this segment with that, perhaps. But that was about the war in Northern Ireland and the fact that, you know, the average Irish person, which U2 is an Irish band, has no place to go. You aren't for this side or that side. What you'd like is for the war to stop. And, you know, that they sang that very passionately, and they have for 25 years. But almost every song they write has a message to it. And Bono, who's the lead singer, and by the way, is more than a rock star. He toured Africa with former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill when he was Treasury Secretary earlier in the Bush administration here. He has testified before Congress. He was, quote, friends with Jesse Helms when Jesse Helms was in the Senate and alive, I guess. Is Jesse Helms still alive? I've forgotten about this. But you know, he's out of the Senate. And he has taken an interest in a variety of issues, from AIDS in Africa to debt forgiveness to any number of issues having to do with, you know, stopping war and promoting peace. And so he's put his money where his mouth is, because he is a relatively effective spokesperson. As celebrities go, he takes action and he gets some things done. So he does back up his words with actions, and that's another thing that people like about him. I can remember, well, my first U2 concert was 81. By 85, they were playing the bigger places, and they had organizations like Greenpeace or whoever else it was, ACLU or whatever, in the arena signing up people. Now, you can say what you want about Greenpeace's methods or the causes that the ACLU backs, but the point is that they were involved at a level that most bands don't ever get to. And that was quite some time ago. So last night's show was quite, how do I want to put this? There was an emotional connection for the crowd. People sing along songs to more songs at a U2 concert than any other band I've ever seen. And I think that is a tribute to Bono. The other thing is, when Bono sings, he kind of pours his heart out in his voice, and there's a passion there. He sings every word as though it's excruciating, and as though, you know, his life is on the line. So he's a very effective performer. But it's gotten to the point where the crowds now sing back to him, and he can stop singing the chorus on many songs. He can turn the microphone towards the audience, and they will sing it, or they'll just sing it on their own. They played the song 40 last night, which I won't try and go through, and I'm not going to play it tonight, but it's a slow song they let the crowd down with at the end of some shows. And they ended with it last night. Now, in the 80s and 90s, they ended with 40 as well. And the chorus goes, how long to sing this song, if you know any U2 songs. But this was something I'd never seen at a concert before in my life. In 85, we're coming out of, well, it might have been the 87 tour, actually. We're coming out of the Meadowlands Arena, what was then the Brendan Byrne Arena. I guess it's now called Continental Airlines Arena. And 20,000 people are getting out. After 2.5 hours of intense, high-energy rock and roll, they let the crowd down with this ballad, which is a trick that I first saw Pink Floyd do. Don't send the crowd out supercharged up and in a frenzy. Quiet them down and send them out peaceful. And so they ended with 40, and we get out to the parking lot, and the crowd walking to their cars. And it was quite a walk to our cars. We had to go over this bridge and everything. The crowd is all singing together, how long to sing this song? The refrain that U2 had ended with. I had never seen anything like that. I'll give you one more example of something I had never seen that I saw U2 do. Later in the show, I'm going to talk to John Clark about Lennon and McCartney being the number two ranked greatest songwriters in rock history, according to AOL Music. I saw a U2 concert. This was 85, because it was out at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. And I can name them on one hand, about five concerts where the opening was impressive, meaning before the band comes on, what the band did to prepare the audience was memorable. And at this show, they were playing Beatles tunes. Now, normally you do not play Beatles songs leading up to your concert. The old rule used to be never play the music of a band that's better than you are. U2 was one of the first bands I ever saw break that rule. And so they were playing Beatles songs leading up to this. And when the last song came on, you could guess it was the last song before the band came on, because they cranked up the volume to concert decibels. And they played a song that you wouldn't think would excite a crowd at this level. They played the Beatles' All You Need Is Love, which is pretty much a ballad. And they cranked it up to concert volume leading up to them coming on stage. In fact, it might have been above concert volume. It was the loudest warm-up music I had ever heard. And this buzz went through the crowd as the Beatles kept singing the chorus, "All you need is love." And by the time the lights went down, the crowd was in a frenzy. And I never would have bet that you could get a crowd to do that based on a ballad like All You Need Is Love. And then U2 took the stage, and they had the build-up that they wanted, and they took it from there. So they're an amazing band, and quite a show last night. I'm not going to try and go through the individual pieces of it. They had an interesting light show. They sounded, as I said, better than any time I think I've ever seen them. And many times I've seen them, I've been close to the stage and below the speakers. And I always feel that when you get back a little farther and the speakers actually bring you the sound from both sets of speakers and it comes right at you, it's louder, first of all, in the back than it is underneath the speakers near the stage. And it, in many ways, more satisfying. I went with a couple of friends I mentioned that I bought tickets for. One was a huge U2 fan, the other one had never seen U2, and they both enjoyed it immensely. I met some other friends beforehand at a restaurant, and we compared notes, how things have been going, and what we expected from the show, and also, all in all, a fine night. The last thing I'll add to this is I got a call from another friend of mine, who's a musician, who had bought general admission tickets to see U2 tonight. They're playing two shows in Washington. And he told me he was going down tonight to get general admission, use his general admission tickets with a friend who he talked into going, because the guy needs to get a night off. And he said they had general admission tickets. And I said, "Oh, well, you know how that works, don't you?" I said, "U2 has this unique arrangement. They sell a bunch of general admission tickets reasonably cheap. The whole floor is general admission, but their stage has a circular ramp that goes out into the audience. So it's a ring, it's a circle that goes out, oh, almost to mid-court on a basketball court. And the band, different members of the band, particularly the lead singer Bono, will walk out there so that he's closer to the rest of the crowd from time to time. But some people get inside the circle and are very close to the stage, and the rest of the standing room only crowd, the general admission crowd, is back farther. Well, what U2 has been doing on this tour is they take 10% of the general admission tickets at random. It's all computerized. And when you go through the gate with your ticket and it gets scanned by the people with the handheld scanners, if your 10% is selected, you're allowed to be inside the circle, right up front. As good a seat as you can get, as opposed to being the rest of the general admission, the other 90%. Well, my friend Chris called me just before my show started at 10 to 7 to say he was in that 10%, and so he and his friend are waiting for the concert to start, which will start about 9 o'clock tonight, Eastern time, and he is right up side of the stage. He's essentially front row seats to see U2 tonight, so he is in hog heaven, as we like to say. And we're going to go out with a little bit more of U2. And when I come back, we're going to talk about Newsmax and Rick Santorum's connection, Senator Rick Santorum's connection to U2. It turns out there's not much of a connection at all. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck.